Welcome to the Visegrad Insight podcast from Central Europe on Central Europe.
Hello, this is Monday, 16th of October, 2023. My name is Adam Jasse. I'm deputy editor of Visegrad Insight. And today we are talking to Krzysztof Izdebski, policy officer at the Batory Foundation and a Visegrad Insight fellow, about the outcome of the Polish election. Hello, Krzysztof.
Hello, hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm fascinated by the outcome of the election, which seems to have delivered a voter verdict telling the current government that it was time to pack their bags and hand over to the opposition. But this is a very general observation, so I'm turning to you as an expert looking at democratic developments across Central and Eastern Europe and broader Europe to ask you, what do you think are the main takeaways from this election?
Yeah, so indeed, I mean, I think I ask you about, you know, how you're doing, not only out of being polite, but I think this is a good day for democracy. We can be very open about it. And I think this is the scenario that actually was not really even reasonable a few days ago, that the opposition's gonna, the three main parties, oppositional parties, we're gonna win the vote. Of course, just to chill out a bit, our ambitions and optimism. Of course, there is the whole procedure around creating the government. So probably, and these are the words coming from President Duda mouth yesterday and today in the morning, that he will offer the creation of the government to Law and Justice Party, because they are in fact the first. They had the best result, unless as far as we know it, but they don't have a majority, and they don't have anyone else to create a coalition. So I think there are quite nervous weeks ahead of us, but it was a good day for democracy. That's for sure. So the situation now, what we're having, is that the second committee is the civic coalition. Then there is the third way, which is and again, a coalition of two parties, the Polish Peasant Party and Szymon Hołownia's Polska, or Poland 2050, and last but not least, the left. These three coalitions will create a government. I do believe in it. And the last is Konfederacja, right-wing populist, much below the expectations, I think. Also, according to the polls we've seen throughout the electoral campaign, but it's, to be very honest, I mean, I'm not sad because of it, as this is a really non-democratical party, and there was a fear at some point that the Law and Justice could create a coalition with Konfederacja, but now, judging on the numbers that we already know, it's also not possible. So again, a good day for democracy, a very difficult time for the opposition, actually, because they will have to sit at one table, talk about the coalition, who's gonna take which role, etc. But I think There is a hope that, you know, we'll not get into this Hungarian scenario, at least, so not having the same populist government for the third time in a row.
Right. And what do you attribute the fact that the turnout is record high, 73%? And also, surprisingly, a lot of first-time voters and young people in general taking part. Unprecedented numbers, you know, people queued until the wee hours, you know, 3 a.m. To cast their votes, even though polling stations were theoretically supposed to close at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. What happened? What mobilized these voters?
So I think this is this shows the strength of the civil society. I mean, unlike in Hungary, we had with some challenges, of course, including the state funding, for example. But we have a very vibrant civil society, including the civil society organizations, or more institutionalized form of civil society, and the big part of the media market was also independent, and I think this is something that that supported the turnout, which is super high. In fact, the highest since 89. I mean, even higher than in 89 when we voted in the first almost three elections back then. So I think this is a very positive sign that the civil society is competent, is well organized, and is able to share their enthusiasm for democratic, for usage of the democratic tools as elections. And there is also this, you know, very important, I think, motivation, especially from the side of young people. And this is also incredible. We had a turnout on like the youngest voters. Last elections was nearly 40%. Now is nearly 70%. So it's a huge. It's almost double, basically. And I think this is part of the response that the young activists were quite present during the election campaign as well. They organized themselves in social media, of course, but also the topics like the climate crisis, for example, which is very important for young people, but also the LGBT questions, abortion, etc., because the government was doing everything not to stop the climate crisis, but to stop abortion and the equal rights for everyone. These young people got really frustrated, but this frustration was, I would say, constructive in a way, and they decided to vote. And this is also something that I think is optimistic, also from another point of view, because we were for quite long time worried that the young people who are also voters for Konfederacja, this right-wing populist party, that they will organize themselves much better. But for many reasons, actually, the Konfederacja failed, fortunately, and we see that the young people are choosing definitely more progressive movements. And this makes me happy in terms of the challenges, for example, with the climate crisis we have.
Right. So are we witnessing a change, a sort of generational change in Poland? I don't know. Influence of the church, conservative values.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, I was always saying, you know, that the Minister of Education, Przemysław Czarnek, the Minister of the Law and Justice government, who is like very conservative and was trying to do everything to make the public school system conservative, right-wing, ideological institutions. He did it, of course, not voluntarily, or this wasn't the purpose of what he has planned. But a lot of people felt that they have to do exactly something different. That more religion, more conservatism meets with the reaction that we don't want to go into this direction anymore. So I think this is like more conservative government than much less conservative young people would be. So this is one thing. But I also think, because it's not only about young people, I think that the civil society and citizens just felt they have this strength and dignity, you know, to change it. When we were looking into the detailed public opinion polls from previous weeks, the majority, 60% of people, so even the voters of Law and Justice, they wanted to government to be changed. These two terms were enough. The people were pretty, you know, I mean, disillusioned, but also pretty desperate in terms of the level of polarization, the level of a low level of the public debates, quality of the public debate, the amount of scandals with abusing the public assets, etc. So the people just wanted to feel, you know, that this is their country and they can't allow one of the political actors to hack the whole country for its own purposes and aims.
Right. But at the same time, law and justice, okay, they got 10 percentage points fewer votes than in the last election in 2019. But at the end of the day, they got the biggest share of the vote at around 36 or 35%. So it seems that they still have substantial support. What constitutes that strong base, that strong support? Who are their core voters?
Mm-hmm. So, of course, I mean, we have conservative citizens as well, the people who maybe are not happy with what the law and justice government is doing with state-owned companies, for example. But at the same time, they have this strong ideological bond. So this is, I would say, around 20% of this group is like the people who were like the hardcore voters. Whatever the law and justice would do, that they will follow it because this is the part of the ideology. So like being religious, traditionalist, talking a lot about you know, patriotism and being a bit anti-EU. But the rest are the people who are, I would say, mostly indifferent, but they see some qualities or advantages of the law and justice government, which is, of course, the one of the examples could be a social benefit system, but also talking quite a lot about security in terms mostly of migration, as we saw, but this is also, we know from other opinion polls that for many people, even the voters of the Democratic Opposition, the Law and Justice parties is seen as someone who can protect the security of the state. So in this really let's say rapid times and violent times that we live through in Europe and all around the world, the motivation for some of the voters was just like, okay, we can trust law and justice that they will protect us against any dangers that they are right there.
In that context, it's interesting to what extent, you know, this image that law and justice projected before the election, that they are the party of security, they are the party of defense. But, you know, just a few days before the election, the top generals resigned from the army. Two top generals plus 10 more senior officers basically quit. And apparently this was in protest at the way the ruling party was sort of using the army for political purposes. To what extent do you think some of these narratives about who they were in terms of security, also migration, were in the end exposed as fake towards the end of the campaign, and to what extent this played a role in the opposition's victory?
I don't believe, of course. I mean, we probably have to dig more into data on the actual motivations of voters during the Sunday election. But I don't believe it has changed a lot. Actually, the whole thing with this visa scandal, which was also like amplified by the opposition, still remained in the bubble. The same with two generals leaving their post. It was well played, actually, by the law and justice government and the public media, which is still one of the biggest source of news for many people, including the law and justice voters. And I don't believe that the potential voters just saw the hypocrisy of the party. But of course, you are right that I have to explain myself. I mean, I don't really mean that they are very consistent when it comes to be the party of security or party of defense, as you called it. But also I learned observing the Polish politics that you cannot rationalize it. So meaning that actually we don't, we have a very bad position in Europe, which also, you know, it's a part of being a secure country, right? You had a lot of friends rather than a lot of enemies or indifferent neighbors. The thing with the visa scandal, so selling, just for our listeners, so the very high ranked public officials and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs are accused of basically selling visas to the migrants from countries like Pakistan and others. Which is, of course, a symbol of hypocrisy, because at the same time they were building this narrative of the immigrants coming from Lampedusa and the Polish-Belarusian border, etc., that would be a danger for Polish citizens. But I think we were still in this like kind of a phase of having, you know, two different tribes. And a lot of news that are not able to burst the bubble, basically. So just maybe an anecdote, when there was the first day of this visa scandal, and the opposition was like really trying to amplify it, it was all over the social media, internet, etc. But I looked at the Google trends. At the same day, the Law and Justice, they announced the increase of the minimal wage. And if you looked to Google Trends searches, then you'd see that the visa scandal was popular, like in big cities like Warsaw, Gdańsk, maybe a bit you know, western part of Poland, but in the traditional traditional places, or places where traditionally law and justice is supported, the minimal wage was the main topic, you know, via Google search. So it says a lot also about how the information is spreading here.
Right. Thank you so much. So finally, I wanted to ask you, what do you expect this government, this opposition government, when and if it is formed later, what are going to be its priorities, given that, you know, they will have to cohabitate with a hostile president. Also, some of the captured institutions that
including the Constitutional Tribunal, of course,
and the central bank. So, what do you expect this opposition-led government to be able to achieve?
Yes, I mean, it's really a challenge. It's really a huge challenge, because as you're saying, this is also, they have to rely on President Duda, unless maybe you know, if we see such a results, but it doesn't look like this so far, at least, that they will have a majority, which will be able to refuse the veto of President Duda here. But let's take this scenario, then not. So in most of the cases, they would try to organize the system in a different way, especially starting from the Constitutional Tribunal. Actually, I mean, I think that President Duda can be an ally here, and that may sound as a paradox, because President Duda was one of the architects of hacking the Constitutional Tribunal and actually making it just putting it out of order, at least. But he also stays in front of decisions about his own future, and also he sees that the Constitutional Tribunal just like literally doesn't work. So I do have a hope that on some of the issue, the President Duda will not be the president of law and justice, but he will pivot more to being the president of the reasonable and common interest of the Polish people. But I also know, and there is a big appetite for doing it, and you can do it without engaging the president, so you don't need legal acts, is try to regain the influence in public media. So, and I hope that not only are we gaining influence for being represented there as the main good character, but to really create a neutral, objective public media. This is what we definitely need here. And another thing which is also possible without engaging President Duda is to change the people who are sitting in the boards of state-owned companies, because then the state-owned companies, as you know, they're like one of the biggest abusers of the public assets towards the to support the law and justice party, let's say, whether in opposition or not. So I think that state-owned companies, public media, and constitutional tribunal would be among the first decisions, because also without changing the situation with constitutional tribunal, it will be hard for the new government to rule.
Krzysztof, thank you very much. This was very informative, and hopefully we can talk again soon about yes. what happens next.
Yes, let's do this maybe in a few weeks if we know the government. This will be very interesting also, because as you know, there are different opinions about even abortion between the potential coalition leaders. It's this important for the young people, for example, as we discussed. So a lot of interesting things ahead of us. So we still remain optimistic, but still trying to observe the situation. Thank you so much, Andrzej.
Thank you.